This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Asking all of you, what was it like to work with Robert Zemeckis and Steve Starkey? You would know him better than anyone else. I think you should begin.
Well, he didn't disappoint me this time around either. Now, it's been about 20 years for me working with Bob, and every time out, he chooses to tell some story that demands some new way, some invention in the style of making movies. And once again, in Beowulf, he's taken this new form of cinema, this new art form, and taken it to another level. And he loves to experiment with different ways of telling stories, particularly when the story demands some new form and some new style. So with him, it was a challenge unlike it, or maybe very much like all the others that I've had.
Alison, if you want to continue.
It was very different for me because I'd never done anything like working in that kind of space of just like similar to Black Box Theater, but I enjoyed it because it reminded me of doing theater and you know, really relying on your imagination and
I'm working with Bob Zemeckis.
To talk about this project for me, I just felt very lucky to work with Bob and the actors, and I really enjoyed it.
John?
For me, it was a great delight working with Robert. He's very enthusiastic, precise, and very clear. And for me, it was a great joy.
Anthony?
Yes, same for me. Ditto. It was confusing at first because we had to do these weird gestures and stand up and pull faces and all that. And that wasn't quite sure what the purpose was. And it was a room very much like this with no costumes or scenery as such. But I think Ray, I was a little late coming in, maybe a day after everyone else, but there's so much energy coming from above. Such positive energy. It made it so easy, and everyone had a great sense of fun with it. And I was just very pleased to... I haven't even seen the film yet. I hear it's pretty good. I'm looking forward to seeing it on Monday with people. Yes, it was altogether a wonderful experience. I'm really proud to be part of this great movie. Thank you.
And Angelina, what is it like to play a demon?
it was great. It was a great experience like we all had. I think the nice thing about it is we all do films these days, and so much of it has become a business, and so much of it is these projects where people want to rush through things, where you feel like, oh, you just, you know, make a movie, and you're not really sure. You've kind of lost touch with the artistic process and the fun of it. And Bob is a real artist, and he loves it so much, and he's so enthusiastic and so original. And so you really feel you remember you're a creative person, and you have fun with everybody else. And it was and I needed that as an artist, so it was really great, and I'm grateful for the experience.
As Beowulf, we have Ray Winston. In fact, Beowulf, who isn't flawless, who is not the typical hero maybe we've seen before, and that probably makes him even more interesting.
Am I answering that question? yeah, well, about Bob Zemeckis, I think every film you watch of Bob's, he invents something. He's probably he's one of these guys, the reason we landed on the moon, you know. I guess that's where it takes film in a way. Every film he seems to make, some new is invented, and it was a great for me, and I guess everyone else, to actually go and work and be in something that was going to be the first, you know, and it's going to get better. So that was that. What was the other question?
Well, that was just about your character. We'll get back to that one.
Well, when I met Bob Zemeckis, obviously I had to do a lot of training for the film. I had to watch my diet and press up, a lot of press ups. It was just... For me, it was, people say it was very much like theatre, but I found it kind of like the ultimate cinema, in a way, without the cuts. You were there and you played the scene out. You were allowed to go, I guess, like theatre, where you can carry a scene on, and you become engrossed within the scene, you know. I loved the speed of it. There was no time to sit around. You actually cracked on with the scene, and your energy levels were kept up. There was no time to actually sit around and lose your concentration. So for me, this was, I absolutely really, really enjoyed this experience, and I'd love to do this again sometime, because I think it's going to get better and better and better, you know.
Crispin, you, in fact, have worked with Paul before.
That's right.
I mean, he said that you were the man who could play this pitiful and scary creature that you're going to play.
Yeah, I worked with him one time before in the first Back to the Future film, about 20 years prior to working with him on this. And it was interesting working from one technology to this different technology in the terms of the style. Of course, he was a 20 years younger man than myself as well. But I remember everything was very particularly storyboarded, and there were very exacting kinds of things that had to be done for working on Back to the Future, which was all excellent. And I noticed, though, a definite change in the style of how the direction was gone, because things were not so necessarily exacting, but there was a more... I actually liked more this way of working, where you were kind of finding it as you were going through it, and you were playing the scenes, as Ray was saying, where you kept going further into the thing and getting finding more as you went along. But it's rare that I'm in a film that I actually like, that I'm in. I guess I shouldn't say that. It's true, but I'm really excited about this film. I just saw it the other day, and it feels like a strange kind of hallucinogenic experience. I'm excited about it anyhow. So it has been an excellent experience. And then these
guys know a lot about it too, I guess. Yeah. After 10 years of work, finally, Bill Wolf.
And 10 years, we wrote the Beowulf script, the first draft, in May 97.
10 years in May.
10 years in May. And then started working on it with Bob at the beginning of 2005. Originally, he wanted to produce it, and then he contacted us and said, I really want to direct it, and talked us into it. Bob, what's he like? He's very mysterious and secretive. I mean, you may be wondering why he's not up here, but if you actually look around, the person next to you, that could be Bob Zemeckis, just brilliantly disguised. It was really easy. I mean, it was the process of working over the script basically was me and Roger and Bob sat in a room, and Roger and I read it out loud, and
Bob began as a writer, and so he never had any bad ideas. He would say, okay, guys, this is the bad idea, I'm just going to throw it out, and he'd throw it out, and it's like, it's actually a fantastic idea.
And it was just incredibly easy, incredibly pleasant. And except that he'd have these brilliant ideas that he wouldn't tell you, and he'd want us to discover them on our own. And occasionally we'd say, okay, we've written this scene, we've done it like that. He'd say, no, you can't do that because that room isn't facing that way. And we'll say, what? He'll say, no, the room isn't facing that way.
Then he would reach over and
then
pull
he'd
out
show us the design for the room. And we'd go, why didn't you show us that before? He'd say, well, you could have come up with something better.
So, yeah, I wasn't prepared for the amount of how collaborative he would be with us, and how he drew us into the process, and how excited and childlike he is, and how he's constantly inventing new technologies to support his ultimate dream as a style of directing. You know, we would walk into the editing room, and you know, it's like, oh, look what we just made! And it's like the Z-Cam, which was like kind of a virtual camera that you could move around the editing room, and as you moved it around, you would see what the camera angle would be on screen. And so I think what excited me was the amount of passion that he was and that kind of excited, childlike quality that he has.
Well, I think it's time to start around the questions. If you can just raise your hand and say which is your outlet.
Stephen Chay for Boston Herald. I want to ask you, Angelina Jolie. One about the character you're playing. I mean, she's been described as the mother of a monster. How do you approach this? How do you see her? What does she mean to, you know, represent or something? And also, the movie says that the myth is preferable to the truth in Beowulf's case. And with your highly publicized life, do you think that's true?
I try not to think about my public life. I focus on my private life, and that's just the best way to live. But as for this character, I was excited. I got a call that I was going to be working with Bob Zemeckis, and I was pretty much saying yes to anything. And then I was told I was going to be a lizard. And then I was brought into a room with Bob with a bunch of pictures and things and examples, and he showed me this kind of picture of a woman half painted gold and then a lizard. I've got kids, and I thought, that's great. That's so bizarre. I'm going to be this crazy reptilian person and creature. And I was very excited. And then met with Crispin, and we had a great time and just amazing scenes. And then saw the poster and saw a few other things and realized I'm not just a lizard. But I'm very excited about it. It was just great. But she's an interesting. She's one of those fun characters. She's evil and she's temptation and she's very fun to play. And again, we had a great time. So I got to work with great actors.
A femme fatale.
I suppose. Sure.
Maybe get a microphone over here.
The first femme fatale.
There you go. Paul.
Oh, sorry. Hi, Angelina. What attracted you doing this? Because of the short work schedule, you were able to spend more. You know, it means you spend more time with your family. And how are you able to balance all these different aspects of your life, public and personal?
I'm the only one on this panel with children. This was a 2.5-day shoot for me, and I was 3 months pregnant.
You wouldn't know.
Well, we did the mapping of my body before, and then it was a pleasure. But yes, the fact that it was short was that much easier to not have to work too much.
Okay, so we have another question.
you just try to balance and try not to work too much and take turns working. It's not that hard.
Marissa Lees with OA Newspaper. This question is for the screenwriters. For those of us who remember, having studied Beowulf in school, I wonder what the motivation for the changes were. I know that, there is no relationship between, the monster and Beowulf in the real story, and there is no, the queen is barely even mentioned. So what was the motivation in making all the changes? And also, for those of those actors who read the original story, what did you think compared to the film?
The biggest motivation was creating a film that would be satisfying as a story. Beowulf is a remarkable, powerful story. It's the oldest story in the English language that we have. But it's always been considered incredibly problematic from a literary and critical point of view. In that it starts with young Beowulf coming in and rescuing Heorot from Grendel and from Grendel's mother, and then we cut in 50 years later and he fights a dragon and dies. And that's the poem. And what we were trying to do was keep the events of the poem the events of the poem while giving the events a reason to have happened. And I think really as we wrote it, we tried to be very faithful to the poem and to the characters in the poem whilst assuming that maybe there were things that were happening off stage, that maybe some of the things that were being told had eroded by time, and sometimes people had lied.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure that our version of Beowulf wasn't the original version.
Oh, I am.
But if you read it, and keep in mind that it existed as an oral tradition for maybe 700 years before it was written down. And when the Christian monks put it down onto the Cotton Vitellius document, they added their own flair to the storytelling. They added their elements of Christianity to it themselves. And what we did was we looked at the existing translations and realized that there were maybe hints and elements of sections of the story that couldn't
be. For example, when Beowulf goes off to fight Grendel's mother, He heads down into that mere all on his own, disappears, is gone for 8 days fighting her, and comes back with Grendel's head.
Why not?
And you're so going, well, 8 days is an awful long time to fight a monster, and why didn't you bring her head back? And so we are actually very faithful to what happened. We're just implying that maybe there was other stuff that happened as well.
And
I just think it was very playable. You know, Grendel in the story doesn't speak, and I speak in the film, so that helps. But on top of it, it's just psychologically they're delving into the characters, and I do think they're being faithful to the original story structure. But as Neil was saying, they're getting into the depth of it, which really isn't a violation. I don't think.
Maybe Ray, you want to follow up on what did you know about the story before?
Well, I told Robert Zemeckis I knew the story, but I didn't. Where I went to school, we read about Al Capone and things like that, so Beowulf was very, very new to me. All I knew about Vikings was Tony Curtis and Kirk Douglas. You know? In a way, that's a good thing, because I read the script not knowing the story, and it seemed to me that when I read it, and I spoke to the boys about this when I came down there, it was kind of a modern story as well. It was about ambition and about greed and about hate and then love at the end, you know, finding what you really wanted was there all the time, right in front of you, your son. And it kind of reminded me of Hollywood in a way, you know, the ambition of people. And that's exactly how I kind of approached it from the off, really. And it's, when I spoke to the two guys, when I came in, that's how I kind of pitched it, you know. And they went, it's exactly what we thought, we'd be lying as well, wouldn't you?
Actually, the very first thing that Ray said to us is, you know what I like about this script? And we said, no. He said, all the swearing. And we said, we just had to take that out.
I don't know the rest of the cast wants to jump in on what you knew about the story before, and maybe Anthony or John.
No, I had read the original, so I'm pretty lazy. And, I tried to read it, but I think I'm a little dyslexic. I fall asleep very quickly. Like Ray, I tried to read, but I valiant effort. But I read the script and I liked it very much. And so I was called into Bob Zemeckis' office. I think I was, maybe because I was living out here, maybe I was one of the early actors to just go in and we had a chat. And he said, what sort of accent do you think you'd use for Hrothgar? Well, I'm Welsh, and Welsh is a pretty old language, and it's Celtic, and we were the Irish who couldn't swim. So I said, I'd like to play it Welsh. And he said, do you think you can get that Welsh? But I said, well, don't ask me that. And I said, well, I'd play Welsh. And he said, well, can you give me an example? So I did a little bit from Hugh Griffith, and he played that horse dealer in Ben Hur. How dare you treat my horses like animals, Judah Ben Hur? So I sort of stole from that a bit, and you know, Welshed it up a bit, and I felt comfortable with it because it's my own language, and I can understand those fighting drunk Welsh people because I was one of myself. Come outside and fight now when I'm in a temper, and all that sort of stuff. So I felt comfortable in playing this drunken, lecherous man.
John, would you like to add anything to what you...
Where I went to high school, it was required reading, believe it or not. And we had to do recitations from it in Miss Burkhardt's English class. And I'm sure they were splendid, but I don't know.
Allison?
No, it wasn't required reading for me, so it was new enjoyed it though, the script. I read it half asleep as well. But you know, it's one of those great stories that you know the themes of it and the themes you take away and you never forget. But when I read the script, it wasn't fresh enough in my mind to compare it, and it wouldn't be at this moment.
Anthony.
Sure.
Hi. I have a question for the ladies and then a question for all the actors. For the ladies, I was just wondering, what did you think of this particular time period? It seemed like it might have been a tough time for women back in the 6th century, even those that had reptilian attributes. But can you talk a little bit about just kind of getting into character in terms of the time period? And secondly, for each of the actors, do you think this has kind of whetted your appetite for more animation?
I handle the time period. I feel it is tough to ask because my character seemed beyond her, certainly not restricted time. She was quite powerful and capable, even though she was stuck in a cave. but you know, quite a different character. Certainly not a woman of the period. So that would probably be better handled by someone else. But I certainly would love to do more. I wouldn't call this animation because we were physically doing all of these things. And every single gesture is ours, and everything is acted exactly by us. And even the where our eyeballs move, because this is a new thing, are exactly where we look, because where they were mapped exactly. So it is our performances, and we had these scenes together. So I do think that's important to, you know, to state, because it's exciting that it's not and it's different.
Well, it was different because, I mean, we had the body suit and the skull cap and as far as the costume, you know, we had a wig and just to feel the heaviness of how of the hair and the dress, the wardrobe, and I think we did this 2 years ago, so I can't really remember what, but it was, different, where, you know, and then I play the mistress of Beowulf, so, I think my character is in a place of just wanting to please him and wanting to make him happy and wanting to live the rest of her life with him and completely and utterly devoted to him. I don't know.
And following up on the second question, maybe John, you want to jump in of how this performance capture technique actually liberates the actor in many ways. Yes.
Well, to me, it was remarkably reminiscent of doing plays, because you go in the morning and you put on all your adult things, but that doesn't take very long, and really no longer than sort of normal makeup takes, and then you act all day, and a lot of the things that might have come into play in normal filmmaking don't come into play there. You don't wait for lights, you don't wait for camera, you don't wait really for anything. Continuity doesn't matter too much, and you just act all day. So I think it seemed to me, in speaking with the other performers that I worked with, that everyone loved that part of it, because you came in and that's what you did all day, and then you left, and it's a very good story, very good text, and that I think for most of us is quite liberating, because at times the process of making a regular film has remained quite medieval in some ways, especially with the amount of time it can take.
John said it, and that it is freeing, and it is paradoxically opens you up, whatever that means. I mean, I remember the first day I was working, I think it was an entrance, I'd be sitting in a throne being brought in some completely smashed out of my mind. And because you don't have to have a beard or a costume, because they've done all that in the computer before. So what you see up there is what they photographed in a previous few days before, to take in all the information about gesture and facial expressions. And you know, you do feel a bit of an idiot standing there with these billy billy helmets on and looking like a little little bees all over you. And I thought, well, the other thing to do is just jump in the deep end, just jump in and do it. And because, yeah, sometimes on film, I think the most mind-boggling thing is when you have 2 weeks rehearsals before you start a film. I think that, to me, I'd rather have my fingernails pulled out than do that, because it's so boring. Because you can't get, you know, when the, but you know, I really don't like rehearsing. But on this, you just have to be ready. You just have to be ready. And what you throw out there is what they're going to put in the camera. So you have to have a pretty good idea of what you're going to do. And it's a, you know, it's quite something. And you're working, you know, working, beating John Mark Mitchell, you know, Robert's done on the set, and you're actually confronting each other. You're actually there, and you are, I mean, virtually sort of naked. You don't have any of the apparel of what a movie set is usually like, or a costume, or so you have no references. And in a way, having no references, you have no mask. So you have to create this performance as you go through, and it's really quite, it's electrifying. Really, you think, oh, I'm free, I can do whatever I like. What are they going to do, put me in jail? You know? So, you know, and to find out that it's going to take another 2 years before they get it all up there on the screen, it's really something else. And I can't even remember what we did much, because it's such a long time ago, but I'm so excited to see it now. I really am. Those overused words, excited, but I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
There's an interesting thing, though, once you watched it. I didn't know when we were performing it if it would feel, because the question was originally about animation, and I didn't know when we were doing it, if when I watched it, was it going to have nuance? Was it going to feel like I was watching myself or not? And it's a very strange experience watching it, because you can feel yourself. And all the performances, and you can feel that it's good acting underneath it as well, which that's what surprised me. And what's very exciting about it at the same time. So that I just wanted to address that.
I don't know, Beowulf, Ray himself, what's anything?
I think going back to what Anthony was saying about, you know, feeling an idiot the first day. I came on set, you know, you're standing there, you know, in this wetsuit and. With this crescent thing on, and you stand there, you do feel naked. You know, you really do feel vulnerable. And it's a question of going, right, are we going to do this, you know, or not? I remember the first take what I'd done was with Brendan Gleeson on this boat, and we were on this ship, you know, this mechanical ship being thrown around and trying to hang on and do the lines in it. And, you know, it became like when I was doing one of those movies, I was kind of talking like, okay. And it was just that fear of actually letting yourself go, you know, and standing, because you had to do a T pose before every take, and you felt really stupid. You know, I'm a 50-year-old man, you know, and you've got these geniuses all around you, all looking at you, smiling. So, you know, you got T pose, lift your leg up, and do a little dance, and you know, so the computer gets you, and then all of a sudden you're going to work, and you go, oh, Jesus, I can't do this. I don't know, you know, and I think I'm like that in every film. I never know whether I'm going to be able to do it or not. You know, you become a little bit scared, and then you have to, you know, find something deep down inside you that goes, oh, well, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to do it. Let's have it, you know? And once you get over that barrier, you really start to enjoy it, you know? And what Crispy was saying, I really didn't know what to expect when I saw the film. I saw it 2 days ago, and I saw it in 3D, and I just sat there with my mouth open for the whole film, and it just blew me away. I think what I really loved about the film was the fact that without the effects, without the 3D, without all the gizmos and all that, it's a great story, and the story holds up. And very rarely you see films that are, you know, special effects movies that have a great story that will kind of live forever. And I think that's what I'm very proud about the film, you know, for me, and being part of that, you know. So it is the initial thing of the nakedness. You feel really kind of not anything on, you know, and it's everyone looking at you. But it's, you know, it's really freeing. Once you've done it, it's, I'd love to do it again.
I think we have another question over here. Any other hands up?
Crispin was playing an inhuman character, but everybody else had a representation of your very famous faces that was pretty close to life. So I'd like to ask a two-part. Crispin, how is it possible to do your acting work, even though it's such a horribly deformed face? And for everybody else, how did you feel about how you looked on screen in this new technology?
What I just said earlier, I didn't know until I watched it if there would be nuances or if you'd be able to feel stuff that came across, and I was very pleased that I was able to feel that, and then especially with the other actors who I could recognize their faces more readily. But in terms of just the initial thoughts of what I was playing, Robert Zemeckis had good thoughts, particularly about the violent scenes in terms of what I was going through, that everything that I was dealing with was painful, that I had terrible problems, and it hurt me very much. So, of course, when you're acting, you're not necessarily thinking about what you're looking like as much as what you're going after. And I had intentions of getting rid of things that were bothering me, and then I had my own bodily problems that were causing me other reactions. So, that was that.
And to follow up the rest of the actors on how you looked on screen when you saw yourself. Angelina.
I got a little shy. I really wasn't expecting it to be as... I didn't expect ourselves to come out as much. I didn't expect it to feel as real. And so because of especially the type of character I play, it was kind of funny at first, and then there are certain moments where I felt actually shy and called home. Just to explain that the kind of fun movie that I had done that was this digital animation was in fact a little different than what they were expecting, you know, so just to... Which I was really surprised that I felt that exposed.
You like your body?
I love my tail.
And Ray, when you saw yourself as a 6'6" Viking?
Yeah, I loved it. there's nothing really more on the side of that. It's really weird because obviously he's 6'6" or something like that, and with an 8-pack, and my wife loves it. But it's funny because you just look at the picture and I go, well, you know, I'm the only one that kind of don't look like me, you know. And until you see the film move, and then you start to recognise yourself, you know. Obviously, a big thing for me was movement. You know, I'm 5'10". You know, I'm an older man now, so it's playing a warrior who's 6'6" and the way you move and that kind of bolt on you, you know. And that was something I had to really think about before the film. And then get older without becoming too old, you know, because you still got to be a warrior. You're going to fight a dragon, you know. And so, yeah, there was that kind of thought, and it was, I swear, it was like making a film, really. And my wife pulled out a picture of me when I was 18. And when I was boxing, and I didn't have the 8-pack, all right, you know. But it looks like me, you know. So, and they had no pictures of me before, and so I don't know if they were that one. I'm probably lying about them, quite a lot. But it's kind of great. It opens so many doors, you know. You can play someone who's 5 years of age, you know. You can play anything you want to play. You can anyway as an actor, I always think that. But, you know, this opens a hell of a lot more doors, you know, in
a way. Anyone else want to comment on their look on the screen? I would ask Steve Starkey to jump in here, because you're the one that actually knew what they were going to look like. I guess you must... Are you still surprised by the visual power of the film?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, the beauty of this form, this art form, is the fact that we get to cast the perfect performer and combine that with the look or the design that the director has in his mind. So it's completely liberating, or it actually allows you to conceive of a film in exactly the way you see it. You know, in the case of Crispin's character, if we were doing this in a live-action setting, we would have to put him in prosthetics, which actually limits his performance entirely because he's hidden behind this mask. But in this case, he's actually able to perform, and we get to see all that performance come through in this digital character that we've created. So I think it's just a wonderful blend, being able to design characters exactly the way you want and then get the greatest performers in the world to come in and act in your movie.
Yeah, there's no question. I've worn prosthetics before, and you can see through... This feels like a much more nuanced form of makeup than the kind of foam that they would normally put in your face. You can see through this much more room.
All right. I think we have a question. Yeah, Joanna.
So this is the really wonderful story about love and death, the Greek culture sense of wonderful. I wanted to know from all of you, which kind of stories did you love when you was a child or a teen? Anderson, Brothers Grimm, and in which way did you relate your fantasy with this story? Because it will be important for all the younger people that will see this movie.
Maybe we can start with the writers. Roger?
I grew up with the Arthurian legends, read to me by my father. And so, I felt after reading Beowulf in high school, after being given it in high school, and looking at the cover, saying, okay, it's a guy with a sword and a dragon, and cracking open that cover, this is like 25 years ago now, and then suddenly realizing I can't understand what I'm reading. And it wasn't until many years after high school that I realized that it had to be read out loud. I think Beowulf is in some ways the kernel, the progenitor of so many other myths that came after, you know, both the Arthurian legends and the legend of Siegfried and Grimhilda, legends of the Hermann,
Not to mention Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, much later, Lord of the Rings.
Because Tolkien was hugely influenced.
And probably the first great defender of Beowulf.
He was. For me, it would have been probably the Norse legends and Marvel comics at more or less the same time. So discovering as a seven-year-old these comics and going, these things are so cool, and who is this guy called Thor knocking around with a hammer, and then finding a copy of Roger Lanceland Green's Tales of the Norsemen and reading all these Norse tales until the pages fell out of the book. And I... really loving that stuff and really imprinting on it as a kid, which meant that when I actually discovered Beowulf first as a comic, it was a terrible comic, in which he wore one of those horned helmets, and the horns were so white he could not have ever got through a door. But then went out and found a copy of the Penguin Beowulf translation because I was interested in what material they based the comic on. And that was how I discovered it. I thought of it as an amazing story.
Anyone else want to jump in? Crispin, maybe, stories that as a child you relate to?
Well, I do really like the Greek ancient religion stories. I think there's a lot of fun in the all of the gods and goddesses that get angry and upset and have very human qualities. And I make my own books that I've published, and I've read a lot of Joseph Campbell, and I think the way that these guys have worked with I guess they call it the monomyth or the hero's journey story structure is just they're having fun with it in that way. There's an organic quality to how they're playing with the structures that's really a lot of fun in the way that those ancient Greek religious stories are a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, I think for me, I guess growing up in the 60s, I was born in 57, so it wasn't so much books with me, it was cinema at the time. And it was from Jason and the Argonauts, and the early one of that anyway, and then films like Man Four Seasons and The Lion in Winter and Beckett, film about Thomas A. Becket. I love history, and I've already got into history in that way, and stories through that. So my books were kind of cinema when cinema to me was great, you know, films like Zulu and all that. So they're kind of, I think one of the greatest films ever made was A Man for All Seasons. You know, there's not much action, it's great scripts and great words, you know. So that's when great films can be books, I guess, to kids who don't read that much. I wasn't a great reader as a kid, you know. So my stories came through cinema.
And do you know stories that you enjoyed as a child?
I'm trying to think of some brilliant answer like everybody else has. But I really I love Treasure Island. When it comes to film, I love Lawrence of Arabia. I think the Traveler. I loved reading Winston Churchill's works. I love his stories of his early life and his adventures and the history in that. So,
book I read very early, which was Kenneth Grimm's Wind in the Willows, which is a great Victorian novel of that time, kind of legend and fable and beautiful, really written novel. And when we were doing the movie, this one, Beowulf, I was talking to Bob and Steve about, you know, what a great power this technique of making movie has for, I don't know, never visualize what's going to come. But, for example, I mentioned something like Shakespeare, so I know that makes people yawn sometimes. But, you know, I know that people are scared stiff of Shakespeare, and I'm not being an English accent, but I'm going to do Shakespeare, but it would be interesting to take some of those great plays like Lear, which are fables and epics of their own kind, Macbeth, and you can do limitless things with those, and I didn't want to. Well, I've got an idea that they could be very powerful in this kind of medium, and I think there are all kinds of possibilities. Yeah.
Tom, any?
Not so much. I remember quite a few things that I read when I was very young, and things like Peter Pan, Our Town. For some reason, I can't remember that time so well, so I couldn't say
that. And Alison, being the youngest of the group, maybe I should ask you what you're reading.
I remember being reading The Hobbit and really getting really carried away in that magical land and adventure and affected by it.
Steve?
You know, I too remember having read to me, just like Roger, the myths and legends of the Greeks and also Norse legends. And when you're a child having a story read to you, you get this vivid impression of this mythic tale being told. And somehow this movie for me has transported me into the same space of having a mythic tale presented to you in a space that's very almost like the way you'd see it as a child. And I just love that quality about it.
We have the microphone here. Young ladies, next to Paul, down on your right. Yes, she wants to ask before. Sorry about that.
Thank you. This question is for Angelina. Your character is living in the cave, but actually the shooting is just, I think, the green screen and you're wearing the green suits. But your character flying and swimming as well. What was the most challenging? Actually, physically, I think you didn't swim and you didn't fly, I think. What was the most challenging to do?
Well, I will make you do weird things. I think for swimming, we had to figure out something I could be attached to. My waist was attached. That was the Christmas. Remember that? I was attached to something that had to be rolled back and forth.
You had a harness.
I had a harness, but I was on something with wheels. It was bizarre. I mean, it was basically, you know, it was day one, and it was that I had to suddenly swim. We were trying to figure out what that would be in this new way. So it was swimming with my upper body, kind of being rolled around Crispin, trying to pretend I was swimming. And same with flying. You took me up with wires and flew around. And we had something where I flew around you for a bit, but I was hooked up and being moved.
Yeah.
Old English.
Old English, yeah.
They're talking Old English.
Yeah.
had more of it, and it was actually great, but I think it went over a lot of people's heads, but it was fun to learn.
My character speaks only in Old English, and we had a professor that I got to sit down with and help figure out all of what was actually said in Old English. It was written in modern English, and then it made sense for Grendel to be the one that speaks in complete Old English, and then Grendel's mother speaks a hybrid of modern and old.
Well, I want to thank you for coming. I don't believe we have time for any more questions. So thank you so much. I mean, we can give a constant